It is day three of the Virginia Film Festival. This is Sean McCord in a very noisy filmmaker's lounge, but that's okay. It shows people the ambiance here. I am sitting across from Colette Burson, a UVA graduate who's had an esteemed career that we want to talk about, and you're bringing your film Permanent tonight, Saturday, 6:30 p.m. at the Colbert Theater. Let's talk a little bit about the film first, and which also takes place here in Virginia.
It does. You know, I'll say that it's at the Colbert. It's sold out, but it's a very large theater, so they say you can get in if you show up.
Yeah. And your stars are Rainn Wilson,
who Dwight Schrute.
Dwight Schrute from The Office. And now, by the way, Harry Mudd from Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
He got cast on Star Trek.
Yeah. As one of the beloved characters from the original series. He's a guest star, but
that's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. And Patricia Arquette. So tell us about the film. Tell us about the story that inspired this.
Well, the film is it's set in 1982 in Virginia, in the mountains of Virginia. It's in a small town. I was in Virginia in 1982 in the mountains, and so there's definitely aspects of the film that are taken from my personal life, and I think that period of time in Virginia really does live in my memory in an interesting way, but, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy, so the events that seemed very dramatic at the time now seem very funny to me. So,
and what's the title?
Permanent. It's called Permanent. Mm-hmm. It's based, some people call it a permanent, some people call it a perm, but, it's based on that thing. We all wanted to look like Farrah Fawcett, and somehow young women of the day were sold on the idea that we could get these soft, fluffy curls by going and putting acid on our heads and having these tight little curls come out. So the tagline for the movie is that hairstyles are temporary, families forever. It's a coming-of-age story about the whole family, not just one character. All of them, I think of as sort of hurtling comedically through space, but they're all very insecure. It's about their hair. It's really told through the metaphor of hair.
So your protagonist is a young girl in 1982.
Yeah, so that would be based on me. I like my protagonist. I went to get a permanent. I was living in a small town. My parents took me to a beauty school to save money, and a mistake was made, and it turned out super kinky, almost, not really, but everyone was very ignorant about it, but it was considered an afro in my small town.
Yes.
And so that's when I figured out that there was definitely a level of racism going on in the town, and I had a rather brutal introduction to that, and so I often say it destroyed my hair follicles as well as my social life. And then meanwhile, 30-some years ago, my father had a toupee because that was kind of the thing back in the day. We weren't sort of celebrating, shaving your head and being bald as we do right now. It was more of a something, Tom Brokaw wore a toupee and Howard Cosell wore a toupee and there was even another one. Dan Rather, I think, even wore a toupee. A lot of them.
Yeah.
And so did my father. And it is based in reality, just like in the movie, that he had a scholarship to go to college, but it was at a Christian college in Southwest Virginia. And you had to swim. And he had a lot of anxiety. He didn't want to swim because he wore the toupee. So I realized decades later, I was like, my God, it's so interesting. We were both completely obsessed with our hair. And our hair was completely dictating these major life decisions. So I sat down to write about it, and then, as usual, when I sit down to write about Virginia in the past, comedy comes out. So I do think the movie is very funny and unexpected, I would say. And also toss out that if anyone wants to follow it or just check in with it, there's lots of ways to do it. The distributors have a Facebook called Permanent Film or Permanent Movie, but I run an Instagram that I run that's more quirky and just has pictures of me and pictures of the set and just things we did and that, and it also has the trailer or tells you about the trailer, and that is Permanent Movie on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And your young actress, Kira McLean.
Yes.
She's going to be here tonight.
Yes, right? Kira's here. Actually, a lot of my young, you know, because the movie has different parts. There's the family part, there's the adult part, mm-hmm. and then there's the kid part, right? So in the adult part, we have Rainn Wilson and we have Patricia Arquette, who won the Academy Award for Boyhood.
Yes.
And in the kid part, I cast a lot of kids. I shot it in Richmond in August 2016. And so a lot of the kids are from here.
Yeah.
And that's very exciting. Exciting to me. We have a young African-American actress from Richmond whose name is Nina Daniels, who's really, I feel, a regional superstar. She's such a powerful actress and who sadly is in a play tonight in Richmond and so can't come. But there's other young actors who can. There's, I believe, Ellie Duffy, who's amazing in it, who's in Richmond. Kira McLean, my lead, who's just marvelous, and others as well. So it's really... it's really fun to think that a lot of them, I haven't gotten confirmation, but I think a lot of them are going to be there.
So
I'm going to have a 13-year-old panel after the movie talking with me.
Nice. So can you confirm or deny rumors that Anne Heche makes an appearance in the film?
Oh, that Anne Heche makes an appearance in
yes.
the film. Oh, that's so interesting. Anne Heche is a very close friend of mine, and I would love, love, love to write for her. But she was shooting, I think she was shooting my best friend Dahmer or something. It's just coming out.
My friend Dahmer.
Yeah. So I wanted her, and I was trying to get her to play. There's a very pregnant teacher who's obsessed with her pregnancy in the movie. It's played by Abby Wathen, and I wanted Anne Heche to play it, but she couldn't because she was shooting. I think it was my best friend Dahmer.
My friend Dahmer. Uh huh.
Yeah. She was the lead, so it makes sense that.
Yeah.
But one of these days, I'll write something for Anne.
Well, I mention that because she was also in your HBO series, Hung, which we were talking
yes,
about.
Yes. Well, we became very good friends because of that, and also I stayed friends with Thomas Jane as well from Hung.
Mm-hmm. And you also wrote. I forgot this. You wrote for The Riches.
I did.
Another TV series that people really need to go back and
Well, you know, I am uncredited, but I actually created The Riches.
Okay. All right.
It was my boyfriend at the time, and I'm such a feminist, I don't quite know how this happened, but I was just being supportive, and I just came up with the whole idea. Every character, every through line, and I gave it to him because he was a playwright and trying to get into television.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think we were even married at that time. We're no longer married.
I started to pick up on that.
No, God bless him. God bless him. But we created that as much as we created Hung. I'd say that the fair credit would be that I created The Riches and he wrote the teleplay.
Right.
Would be the fair credit.
People got. I don't know if it's available on streaming, or whatever, but people got
The Riches is great. It's Eddie Izzard. It's Minnie Driver. It's on FX.
At Virginia Film Festival guest Noel Fisher.
Oh, he's here somewhere.
Yeah,
I need to say hi to him.
Yeah, he's here. He's in the Long Road Home.
Oh, see him, you might see him before I do. Tell him I said hi.
I it's funny because William H. Macy is also here, or was here.
Yes,
last night.
I don't know him personally, but that's
but
cool.
But they were together in Shameless on Showtime.
Wow. So, well, Noel was a great actor. We loved working with him.
Oh, he's wonderful. He's one of those. I mean.
Very precise.
He was Cal in The Riches.
Yes,
and then,
you really know.
I loved the series. And then he's one of those actors, every time he shows up, it's like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
He's so good. He was in a couple episodes in this season of Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, he was. He's so good.
Yeah,
he's really good. I look forward to seeing him.
He plays these really likable, unlikable characters.
Yes. Yes, he does.
So, anyway, I'm sorry. We got off.
Oh,
on
you know,
tangent.
Maybe I can get us back on the track by saying I did go to UVA.
Yes, you did.
And I loved it. It was so great. I really, really, really loved going to University of Virginia. And there were no film classes here, really. There was one documentary class I took, and then I took a playwriting class with Professor Doug Grissom,
who is still around.
He's still there in the drama department, and he's actually teaching a few playwriting classes and writing a short film, and then I think they're producing the short film next semester. So he's still doing really great creative things here. I appreciate him a lot.
So how did you transition from playwriting at UVA to creating TV series?
Well, you know, it's an interesting journey. I would say luck is a factor. I mean, determination and all of that. But I in my fourth year at the University of Virginia, I decided, and actually my Doug Grissom told me this story last night. He said, you know, I was an undergraduate actor, so I did act quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he said, we were at a drama party, and you came up to me and said, Doug, I've decided I'm going to be a playwright. And I said, oh, have you written any plays? And you said, no, but I will.
Right.
And when he said that, I had a frisson of memory. I was like, oh, my God, that's right. I did say that. How intense is that? I just remember I really wanted to make a career choice that was without fear. I thought that I was young, so even mm-hmm. though I was afraid, mm-hmm. I was very afraid, I would move forward fearlessly. And I decided that of all the things in the world, playwright is what I would most like to be. It was the most... somehow holy calling to me. My mother always wanted me to be a preacher, and so I did get the holy call. It was just to be an artist.
It was your calling. I totally get that.
But I applied to graduate school from the University of Virginia. I applied to 5 schools. I was rejected from all 5 and on the wait list, I think, for a 6th. And that's when I learned a very fascinating tenet of at least a Hollywood career, which is that you never know what's bad is good and what's good is bad. Mm-hmm. It can flip because... Mm-hmm. At the time, not getting into graduate school during my fourth year at the University of Virginia was, in my opinion, you know, it was just a huge setback.
Sure.
I wept. I was absolutely crushed. I had no idea what I was going to do. And furthermore, when you're in your fourth year and you don't know where you're going, it was sort of embarrassing. It was embarrassing. Mm. But instead, I stayed at UVA. In Charlottesville. I was a waitress at the downtown mall for a year. I wrote my plays, and I reapplied. And then that year I got into my 2nd, my 4th, and my 5th choice, which just goes to show it's all intensely arbitrary.
Yes.
It's incredibly,
yes.
I mean,
yes,
I didn't get into 1st, 3rd, and 5th or whatever,
uh-huh,
you know what
uh-huh.
I mean? So, and then when I got to NYU, I very quickly realized that not being in the class before me, for reasons I could go into, was such a blessing that I was actually exactly where I belonged. And mm-hmm. then I happened to, that year, luck into a fellowship that paid for it all, that it wouldn't have happened the year before. So I got to go to NYU for free.
Wow.
I know. It really turned around. And anyway, NYU doesn't advertise it very much, but they, I don't know why, because to me it's one of their great strengths, but they are the only program in the country that teaches all 3 forms. So they teach playwriting, screenwriting, and television writing.
Hmm.
Their degree is not called screenwriting at NYU Tisch School of the Arts. It's called dramatic writing.
Hmm.
So you can go in the filmmaking program to be a director, and it's interesting. I've been getting some questions from students about what I recommend. But the problem with getting a filmmaking or directing degree is that they don't really teach you how to write.
Right.
Or you can get a writing degree where they teach you in all 3 forms. And it's the only place in the country. So if you, like, for example, if you apply to Yale, which was I was applying to because my dream was to be a playwright, like the female Sam Shepard or something, you apply to Yale for playwriting. You apply to USC or UCLA or, you know, for screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And NYU somehow kind of flies beneath the surface as very well-respected, one of the best, but nobody really knows quite what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it does it all, and they should, like, scream that to the rooftops. So I came in as a playwright, but my first year course load was playwriting 1, screenwriting 1, character and dialogue and television writing 1, something like that. And then by the end of my first semester, I had to write a 30-minute play and a screenplay. And so essentially, I went in solely thinking of theater and only knowing how to aspire to the theater, and ended trained as a screenwriter. And for a long time, I very assiduously and devotedly tried to be a playwright, a female Southern playwright in New York City, and it just didn't work. People weren't interested. But then every time I literally wrote Fade In, like every single thing I wrote for cinema, somebody wanted to buy. And for some reason, for the first 8 years or so, I didn't pay attention to that because I was so focused on what seemed to me to be the purer
sure.
art.
Sure.
And then finally I was like, wow. I mean, I'm not saying they paid me a lot. I was a broke artist, but at least $500 and sometimes $5,000. You know what I mean? And so I think it's because I didn't have much of a cinematic history or tradition as some of my classmates did. In some weird way, I think that helped me because it made me think my imagination was always original. I wasn't comparing it to 3 or 4 other movies I'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I was like, wow, okay, I'm getting constant praise in the film direction and no praise in the theater direction. So maybe I need to turn this barge around. So I started working on being a screenwriter and a writer. But the thing is, because of those eight years of doing theater and being trained as a playwright, I was with a group of, I think it's very important when you're a young writer or a writer of any age, is to have a community of people doing the same thing you are doing. It is crucial.
Absolutely.
It really keeps you feeling like it keeps it alive in your brain, you know, just talking about it with people. So I really had that, and we focused on the very basics, the nuts and bolts of writing for years, like exposition, character, how do I solve this problem? And so what I didn't realize at the time is that we were kind of becoming Jedi Knights, because we were completely separate. Like half of my graduate class went to LA right away, mm-hmm. to make fame and fortune in screenplays, right? And we were the sort of nerdy ones who stayed in the theater and did things like, how do I write a character? How do I, you know, really ars gratis artis, art for art's sake.
Yeah.
But in the process, we became, like, our writing muscles became so fierce because we weren't trying to sell. We were trying to make great art. So then about 8 years into it, when we were in our mid-30s, and suddenly it was harder to be constantly broke, we went to LA to try to get into TV, also because it's a period where TV has been on the rise. It's peak television, and they're looking for playwrights, right? So we went there, and all of us very quickly transitioned. I mean, at first, I remember there was someone told me something. Well, this doesn't work. This will be fine for television. And I thought it was sort of shoddy. And then I saw it later filmed, and I was like, oh no, I was right. Actually, you know, if something's shoddy in the theater, it's going to be shoddy for television. There is no. I don't have to learn new rules. And so my very first job in television was actually, this is an unusual trajectory, but it was executive producer and creator. Because I had done my grunt work, like in the true blue, you know, like in the writing process for the love of it, mm-hmm. and so I didn't have to start at the bottom in television. I actually started in a really strong place.
I'm very glad you went this direction in our conversation, because I'm a writer myself.
Oh, you are, yeah.
And we'll talk. Mm-hmm. And it's this phenomenon now of theater becoming, as it turns out, one of the best training grounds for television.
Well, you know, I like to think, I could be wrong, but I do like to think I played a major role in that. Because when Hung came on the air, so we are talking 2008, yeah. and then, 2008 is when I was hiring writers, right? Mm-hmm. 2008 into 2009. It went on the air, I believe, in 2009.
Sounds
for
right.
3 years, Hung. I, because of this background that I've just detailed to you, and because, like, when you're reading writers, you get sent, oh my God, I mean, this, they were still doing paper, but I think they still do paper just because it's easier for the showrunner to grab and read. Like, I had a pile, you know, like, it was like 50 scripts in this pile and 50 scripts in that pile, and, you know, every agent submits their writers, and so, like, it's just a tremendous amount to read, and it's very hard to dig through it and figure out where are the special voices. Mm-hmm. And so I put out a call through my producers that I only wanted to see playwright resumes. And Hung was a very high-profile show at that moment, and everyone was aware of what we were doing, and so it was very, very well known in all the agencies that that we were only looking at playwright resumes. And then because I came from New York theater, I was able to look at it and see, like, oh, that's a bullshit reading, that's a real reading.
Right.
That's a, you know,
right.
I knew who had, and then I want, if I liked a playwright's resume, then I asked to read the scripts, and then I followed up on it that way. And that was a very interesting way of finding writers. And then a few other shows around that time, I don't know if it was just in the zeitgeist and they did it on their own or whether we started it. But we were, at the very least, at the very beginning of that. And now it's kind of a thing in Hollywood. It's really picked up in the, you know, God, 9 years since, like in this period of time where now playwrights really are very desired in Hollywood for just some of these reasons I'm telling you, because the notion is that they're where the real writers go.
Yeah. My guest, Colette Burson, who is personally responsible for bringing theater into TV, I'll give you credit for it.
Well, I'll take it, because it may be true. It might not be, but it might.
Her film Permanent screens Saturday, tonight, 6:30 at the Cobra Theater. So let me ask, you've done obviously very well in TV and film. Do you find yourself drawn back to the theater? Do you have a
drawn back to the theater?
Do you have another great theater project in you?
You know, I do not find myself drawn back to the theater. I think because I am too addicted to the crack cocaine of seeing my work on film, and also because I am a film director. You know, I directed Permanent, that's tonight, and I just finished directing something else. That is such a fascinating process, and then it stays around forever.
Yes.
You know, and so that's very addictive. So I don't find myself drawn back to the theater, although I am constantly learning those lessons. And many times when, you know, I have a lot of people I mentor, and many times when they come to me really wanting to go to the next level with their writing or wanting to start out as a writer, I will send them to playwriting classes. That's where I'll start them out, because I'm like, I don't, and they're like, but no, I don't want to write theater. And I'm like, well, I don't care if you don't want to write theater. You need to write a scene. And then they'll say, but I can write a scene for a TV show. And I'd be like, no, because if you're writing a TV pilot, you are inherently and inevitably trying to mold and frame that for a commercial audience. Like, you are trying to thematically, and you're trying to put it as a product in the commercial marketplace. Whereas, you know, you need to be learning how to listen to voices in your head and how to write them and how to channel them and direct them and do, you know, be... You have to learn how to be an artist and get the voices in your head to do a lot of the writing for you, as opposed to it being a fully conscious act. And so the theater is where you should start, because all you're trying to do is to communicate some very, you know, some emotion that comes ideally straight from your groin or your heart or your brain. But groin and heart would be best.
And the pleasure and privilege of seeing different actors read your words.
Absolutely. And then you can have somebody else read it. I mean, even now, I've learned the lesson over the years that, you know, when you finish a first draft of something, it is such a high, and you want everyone to read it.
Uh-huh,
and it is,
uh-huh.
But it's like a siren song. You have to resist. And what you should do is call over a bunch of friends to your house, and you should make a pot of clam linguine and some salad.
Let me write that down.
Yes. I can give you the recipe. And then you have them, it depends on how long your thing is. You have them read for about an hour, and then you ask them questions, and you talk about it, and you see what the consensus is. And also, by the way, you should disregard, and I know my actor friends will kill me, but you need to listen less to what the actors tell you and listen more to what the intellectuals and writers will tell you about your work. And that is not that your actor is not a fully vibrant, very smart, wonderful person. It is simply that actors look at scripts very differently from how writers look at scripts, and they look at they're invariably attracted to the moment that they get to play.
Sure.
And they don't look at the structure or how that... They have a hard time looking at something as a whole, unless they're quite extraordinary at script analysis. So if an actor says something, you just have to see if other people agree, really. And if everybody nods, then, you know... And then sometimes people... There's this thing we call in the writer world, see the note beneath the note.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if someone is saying, I don't like X character, or I don't believe the romance, or whatever it is, you don't understand that because it's so clear in your heart what you wrote. Like, how can people not get this? What's the problem? You need to look deeper and say, okay, what is the note beneath the note? Because they're telling me that something doesn't work, but what they're telling me, what the words are not necessarily what the problem is. It's more like it's an X and it's dig here. Right? And so try to figure out, maybe there's some moment that's not playing right, or maybe there's some thing that you think is quite clear in the character that is not clear at all, and maybe it can be solved you would be amazed how many dramatic and scene problems can be solved with action lines. Someone's like, so when it's played, someone will play it that way, right? But just for the reader, oh, I didn't understand he was angry. So you say, he slams his books down on the desk, comma, frustrated, you know, period. They get it. So sometimes it can be fixed very simply that way.
I will agree with you, but I'm going to add another layer, and that is that experience of having actors commit to a piece that you've written. They get really invested in their character, and in that process they can find things that maybe you as a writer didn't know were there, or find those moments that they're having trouble connecting to. Why, you know, it's not what's my motivation, which is a joke. I mean, it's why, you know, why is my character responding this way? So it gives you, as a writer, a chance to go, that's not in the text. You don't get that. You don't see what I was trying to do here. So there is definitely there's definitely ways that having actors invest in your characters can also help improve your writing.
Yes. Well, if you've done, it depends on what the actor's note is. So the actor says, you know, I really think I should add this line here.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they know something you don't.
Right.
Like, and it's really needed. I almost always allow that. If they say, I don't understand why, and you've done due diligence and you fully understand why, sometimes the greatest gift you can give an actor is to very calmly explain. Say, you know, and just really, and then talk to him in terms of verbs. You are trying to persuade him here, but you're not necessarily, but you're also hiding the truth behind your, you know. And
yeah.
So if you really believe in the moment, my advice is to very, you know, calmly try to explain the moment before you change it. Because that's the thing. I mean, actors are mercurial. They're like, you know, pieces of silk in the wind, and they slip into the role. And so sometimes they see something you don't. You have to be open. You have to be very open. And then sometimes they just don't understand something that you understand. And in that case, you need to really try to communicate it and help them see it before. Like, they'll say, but I don't think she'd be angry right here. You say, well, I want you to try it again and come in and slam the door behind you. You know, like, pretend that someone just, you know, kicked you in the street, or, you know, like, you try to help them get to the anger earlier, for example.
Mm-hmm. I have also had the experience where an actor will suddenly find something and go, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
I see
great.
What you've done here, and I always take credit for it.
Yeah.
Like,
it was
yes,
very
you're
nice.
Right, I am that smart.
It's very nice when they... Particularly when they don't see something and then they do, it's really wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Colette, we could probably talk all day, but you probably have places to go.
Well, I'm off to talk to a playwriting class of Doug Grissom's.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's where I'm leaving for, at Colbert, at University of Virginia. And then again, I'd like to just to toss out, if people are interested in the movie, it's tonight at 6:30. They say it's sold out, but mm-hmm. they also say there's always empty seats because
yeah,
there's 500 seats.
Colbert, there's a huge
And you can follow it online, either through just Permanent Movie, or it was the number one trailer on iTunes last week, which is kind of for 2 days.
Nice.
I know, it's kind of amazing, given that we're an independent movie. We're only made for $1 million plus union, so I was very pleased with that. Or my quirky sort of personalized Instagram, which is Permanent Movie.
And quickly, you said you got another project that you're working on right now. Can you talk about
that?
You
know, there's a few. I've been really interested. You know, well, I was going to answer an earlier question of yours by saying theater has not been drawing me back, but Virginia, oddly enough, has been drawing me back. I shot here. I meant to shoot in Kentucky, and then I called up Andy Edmonds just as a Hail Mary pass.
The Virginia Film Office, great guy.
And he was like, Colette, you're not going anywhere else. You're going to shoot this thing here. And I was like, how can I shoot it here? Like, your incentives are not as good as Kentucky. I want to. Mm-hmm. That'd be my fantasy to shoot it in Virginia. And he just helped me find ways to make it happen. So I'm very grateful for his support.
Yes.
And then last weekend, I got a call from George Mason University in the northern part of your state.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got this great program there run by a lot of wonderful people. One of them is Lisa Thrasher and Hans Charles, who's Ava DuVernay's DP on 13.
Yes.
He just got nominated for an Emmy. And they asked me if I'd like to come shoot a short. And so I just finished shooting a short back in Virginia. I can't believe it. Just last weekend. So I shot for 3 days in this beautiful place, Green Hill Winery. And somehow it kind of turned out a sort of horror type movie, which I've never directed. I mean, more an intellectual, brainy horror thing. And so thanks, Virginia. here I am again.
Are you here tomorrow?
I am here tomorrow morning.
Because... Best of Film at Mason, 11:15
Oh, really? Oh, I might. That's probably some of my
Browns
students, because the point was to have a student crew.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm probably going to have to go see that.
Oh, you have
and
to go see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I spoke to them.
That'll be a great pleasure.
Well, and they're okay, so.
All right, we're done. Well, permanent.
We're done. Permanent tonight, 6:30
p.m. Tonight, 6:30.
Just show up.
Show up.
You can meet me
in the lobby. I'll shake your hand.
Virginia, writer, director, playwright, everything, Colette Burson, UVA graduate.
Proud UVA graduate.
I have no doubt. We're going to see you back here again. Thank you for coming.
Well, at this point, Virginia's not letting go. Thank you.
Thank you, Colette.